Good morning and welcome back to Nakayomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 11th parak of Sefer Melachim Aleph. And this parak really is a turning point. It's a bit of a sad place. It's really the downfall of Shlomo HaMelech. And this leads into, unfortunately, from here onwards, where most of it is unfortunately in a receding pattern. So when we think about how leaders fail, when great people sometimes have flaws, this is one of the prakim that we need to look at and focus at. So let's just do a quick summary and then to consider a few points. So the parak starts off by telling us that Shlomo HaMelech had a relationship with many non-Jewish women, and the daughter of Paro. He married women who were from Moab. He married women who were from Ammon, from Edom, from Tzidon, from Chitiyot, from Chayeches. And we see a number of people, a number of women who he's marrying from across the board, and the Tanakh comments as the narrator and saying that that he ignored the fact that Hashem told him not to marry so many wives, and in fact the Tanakh gives us numbers. He married 700 women and 300 Pilag Shem. I mean that the numbers are astronomical. The way the Tanakh describes is Vayatu Nashov Esliboy, and because he was so involved with so many relationships, it turned his heart, and this is the Tanakh makes pretty clear this is towards his old age, towards the end of his years, and what ended up happening, unfortunately, is he started actually serving. It says Vayelech Shlomo Acharei Ashtores Elohei Tzidonim. So he started serving these deities of these other nations, and which of course was in the bad in the eyes of Hashem, to the degree that in fact he built a bama, which is an altar to Kemosh, which is the Shikutz Moav, the deity of Moav, which is in Jerusalem, and to Molech, which was the Shikutz Bnei Ammon. These are service places in Yerushalayim, and you think aghast. You know, like Shlomo HaMelech made the base Hamigdash. How could he do this? The Tanakh tells us that Vayisanaf Hashem b'Shlomo, Hashem got very angry with Shlomo, and he says the following. This is what God's response is. He says, "Yan Asher ha'isa zois imach v'lo shomarta b'risi v'chukasai, because you did not keep my covenant, which I commanded to you, I have torn your reign, your kingship from you, and I'm going to give it to your servant. But I'm not going to do it in your day, because of the honor of your father. I'm going to do it in the days of your children or your son. And then I'm not going to tear all of the kingship from you. I'm going to give you one tribe for the sake of David, for the sake of Yerushalayim." And that was Hashem's response. So Shlomo himself is protected, but nonetheless his children are not. But the parak goes on to describe the two antagonists to Shlomo's son and how they developed. So the parak from Pasuk Yud Dalet to Pasuk Chof Hei spends the time describing what we'll call the arrival of Hadad. So the Tanakh says, "Vayokem Hashem Sotah LeShlomo." So Hashem establishes his antagonists, and the one is a person who comes from Edom, because at the time of Yoav, when Yoav was the all powerful general of David, he in fact killed all the males of Edom. Meaning to say, when he brought Edom into submission, he almost completely decimated the nation of Edom. However, there were a few survivors. There were a few refugees. And one of them was a person called Hadad, and he escaped to Egypt with a few of his servants, was given refuge in the house of Pharaoh. And in fact, Pharaoh liked him so much that not only did he support him, but gave him his sister in marriage. His sister's name was Tahpanes bore him a son, and he whose name was Genuvas, and they lived happily in Egypt. However, when Adad heard that David died and Yoav was no longer, so Hadad said, "Please let me go back to my land," meaning I want to set up a resurgence. And Paro was very upset because he wanted him to stay in Egypt, but nonetheless, he was sent back to Egypt and to Edom and started the revolution. This is going to be the start of the fight against Shlomo HaMelech, the son of David, and ultimately against Shlomo's son as well. We see in this mixture as a fellow whose name by the name of Rezon ben Elyada, who was also a Sevav of Hadad Ezer, the king of Tsova. So we're seeing these people who are now starting to the survivors of the campaigns of David, who are slowly growing in power during the reign of Shlomo, and they're going to take advantage later on. So Tanakh is framing where this comes from. It wasn't in a vacuum that this just happened. And finally, we meet the third antagonist, and that is Yeravam. Yeravam is the son of Nevat. He's from Ephrati, which means to say that he is from the tribe of Yosef. He's born of a woman called Tsaruah, not Tsaruya, but Tsaruah. He started to bring about a revolution against Shlomo. What was his background? Well, apparently he was a very capable young man, and Shlomo HaMelech saw his capabilities and appointed him as a tax collector for the house of Yosef, which is where he's from. Obviously, this is going to play an important role later on when he forms his revolution, because the revolution is going to be based around economics at the very beginning. While he's a young man, he is brought out by a prophet called Achia HaShiloni. Achia HaShiloni is one of the prophets at the time, and Achia takes Yeravam ben Nevat aside and tears his clothes into 12 sections. 11 tears, 12 sections, and he says, take 10 of them, because Hashem is going to tear away Shlomo's kingship from him and give you 10 of those chalakim, obviously representing the 10 tribes that Yeravam is going to pull away from the kingdom. And he says the following words: because Shlomo abandoned me and started serving these other gods, I'm going to abandon him, and I'm going to make you a king over Israel. If you will listen to me, then I will give you the kingship, and if not, then not. That's the way Achia puts it. And at the end of this, in fact, Shlomo HaMelech realizes that Yeravam is a threat, and Shlomo tries to kill Yeravam. Yeravam goes into exile in Egypt and takes refuge with Shishak, the king of Mitzrayim, until the death of Shlomo. So again, he has the third antagonist who is being set up. We're seeing the problems already arising. And finally, at the end of the parak, in Pasuk Mem Aleph to Mem Gimel, we're told about the death of Shlomo HaMelech, and he ruled for 40 years and was buried with his fathers, and his son Rechavam rules in his place. That's really the parak itself. Let's just think about some details or some points to take away from this. Number one is what is going on with Shlomo HaMelech here? Here you have the wisest of all men. Here you have a person who really followed Hashem's rules, set up the best of Middash. What is going on? So the Rambam says what happened was that these women that he married, he converted all of them. The problem was they weren't so interested in conversions. They weren't really fully buying in, and so they continued to serve their Avodah Zarah. In fact, the way that it is brought down in the Malbim, the Malbim suggests that it wasn't that Shlomo HaMelech himself served Avodah Zarah, and he's medayik this in some of the words, is that he allowed them to continue in their upbringing, with the upbringing in the way they served, which therefore attributed to him the service of Avodah Zarah, because he did not put his foot down. On a more Kabbalistic level, the Chida points out that what Shlomo HaMelech was trying to do is he was trying to extract from the klipos, he was trying to extract from the depth of impurity the pureness that was possible to be found. But interestingly enough, he made a mistake, because usually when you do that kind of thing, you need to go out to the klipos, to the darker side of reality, not bring them into your palace and give them malchus, which is what the problem was with Shlomo HaMelech's model over here. Also, famously, as Chazal pointed out, the Torah tells us that a person of Lo Yarbe Lo Noshim, a king, is not supposed to marry so many wives. But nonetheless, V'lo Yosu Levova, that his heart should not be swayed. Shlomo HaMelech says, I will marry and I won't be swayed. Meaning to say, he looked at the reason the Torah gave and thought that he was no longer under the rubric of what the Torah was talking about. And unfortunately, the Torah knows better than even the wisest of all men. And this is part of his downfall. One or two other things that are worthwhile thinking about is that why is it that Shlomo himself was spared? Why it was only his children? So the Malbim points out that really Shlomo was given kingship unconditionally as a gift to David, but his children were given to him were given it conditionally, and so the condition now is up in the air: are they going to merit it or not? We're going to see just one interesting thing when it comes to the tearing of the garment of of Yeravam, and this obviously relates back to the tearing of the garment of Shaul, that his kingship would be torn away. It's also, the Malbim points out, that when you have a prophecy which is attached to an action, it's very hard to retract that prophecy. It sort of crystallizes that prophecy into reality. And the last thing just to think about over here is, what role did Yeravam really have? It's very confusing. As a person reading Tanakh, was Yeravam fated to be a king? Was he fated just to be an enemy? Was he a punishment, or was he actually a hope? It's very hard to know who he is. Of course, here we have a prophet giving him his position. So the Malbim makes a very interesting point, and he actually puts it into context of Pasuk Lamed Zayin. The Pasuk says, I'm going to take you to be earn rule, and you'll rule over everything you desire. Then, and you'll be king of Israel. So the Malbim says, there's a condition in there. If you're able to rule over yourself, of your own impulses, then Yeravam, you know what, you could be a king, but you have to make the decision if you're willing to be that king. And that's the question that's going to be out of hand, and we're going to see that Yeravam is going to fail just as miserably, and perhaps more miserably, than the person he is supposed to be replacing. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.